Welcome everyone to iloverealestate.tv. Great to have you guys on board. Now, today I thought it'd be interesting to talk about a question that I get asked all the time. And I get asked this question by young people who are going out and buying their first house. I get asked this question by people who are going through a little bit of a change in their circumstances, maybe come out of divorce or just sold a place and are cashed up and don't know what to do. And, you know, it's a very, very common dilemma. And it's a dilemma that's really been going on for a long time. I remember when I was back, buying my first house and all of that kind of stuff, it was a similar kind of question that I asked myself. So what's this question I'm talking about? Well, what it is whether, if you can go and buy one property, whether you should go and buy a PPR, or principal place of residence to live in, or whether you should buy an investment property. Now, I don't think there is a clear-cut answer to this, and I thought it'd be interesting to invite Ian along again. Hello, Ian. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
Very good. Now, Ian's one of my students, and he's done quite a bit of, you know, lots of things along the way. He's owned homes, he's rented homes, he's lived in warehouses, you've lived on in all sorts of places, really on top of shops and all sorts of things.
Motorhomes.
Motorhomes, yes.
Everywhere.
Houseboats.
Yes, I have too, yes.
So I think you got the experience to talk on this particular topic.
I reckon so, yeah.
Okay, so let's look at the basic question. We've got a young person who, or a young couple, whatever, who has some money to buy a property. Not two or three, just one. What should they buy? Should they go out there and buy an investment property and rent it out and obviously, you know, have the advantages and tax advantages to go with that, and we'll explain that in a minute, or whether they should go and buy a house for them to live in. Obviously, if they buy the investment property, they've still got to live somewhere and they've still got to rent. So let's just explore that little scenario a little bit. Let's go down the road of if they buy a PPR, or a principal place of residence. Now, I guess it's good, Ian, that you're male and I'm female, because I think generally males and females have a little bit of a gender bias on this one. Would you agree with that?
Well, I would agree, because it shows up in our family. I actually have four daughters and my wife. And
so you live with five women?
Five women. And I can tell you that they do want a home. And for me, from a male perspective, it doesn't really matter where I sleep. I'm quite happy as long as I'm around my family. But that's two different versions of events that will change from, you know, one component of female versus male. And so, you know, we do have a home at the moment, although it's not owned.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that in a bit. Let's go back to our young couple. They've got enough money to buy one house, one property. Should they buy an investment property or should they buy a PPR? Well, let's look at what happens if they buy a PPR. If they buy a PPR, first up, they're probably entitled to the first homeowner's grant. Now, even though that's not as flash as it used to be, it's still worth having.
Yeah, and there are some states that giving very generous opportunities in there. So you'd have to, and there is some really good websites that'll tell you on the first homeowner's grant. I think it's www.fhog.com.au, and that'll give you some information.
And if you put /your state after that, it'll give you whether there's any state government grants going at the particular time when you happen to be listening to this, because that changes all the time as well.
And, important part of the first homeowner's grant is that you are, in some circumstances, allowed to buy an investment property first and still have access to the first homeowner grant down the track.
Yeah, I think the requirements on that is that you've got to live in it sometime in the first 12 months. For 6 months, isn't it?
That's if you do use it, but there is circumstances where you can decide to go and buy an investment property first and
save it.
And save your first homeowner's grant until a purchase down the track.
Yeah, that is true too. Mm. Okay, so first homeowner's grant is a big tick in favour of a PPR. The whole female, I like my house, you know, this is where I am, I can feel it, I can touch it, it's mine, does come into it, no matter how much you may argue to the contrary. There's a definite female gender bias that they prefer to have their own home. The second thing is obviously reduction in stamp duty. If you're buying a PPR in most states, you'll get a bit of an ease there from an initial purchase perspective. And then you think, okay, well, let's look at the benefits of your own home. If you're buying something that you can do something to, I don't believe until you've replaced your income, and two or three or four times, I might add, and, you know, you don't need to produce any more passive income, until that point in time, I don't believe you should have your dream house. I don't think you should be even contemplating having your dream house. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't have a home. But your home, in my opinion, should be a tool, a stepping stone to the next thing in your investing career. So if you're buying a house, you should be buying something that you can do something to. You know, at an absolute minimum, you should be buying something that's got some upside through manufactured growth. Now, whether that's a property that, you know, you might build and you make money out of building it because you've done your analysis and you've worked out that finished homes are selling for more than what, you know, you can build it for and all those sort of things, that may be a strategy. Not always, though, because a lot of the house and land packages drop in value 40 to 50 grand as soon as the marketeers walk out of there, because that's how much the salespeople are selling you that house and land package you're actually getting. But there are situations where that can be the case and you actually do make money on the build process. The second thing is that you might be looking at a property where an older property that perhaps you can renovate. Now, if you're renovating a property, just understand that you can live there while you're doing all the manufactured growth process and all of that kind of stuff. So I've lived through a lot of renovations over my time, and let me tell you, it's not the easiest thing to do when you've got little kids around. I guess you'd be the same.
Yeah, I've been banned from renovating PPRs anymore. So the next PPR which we do move into will be completely finished before we move into it. Now, I remember our last one. I remember one night getting into bed with sand and dirt on my feet, and it just wasn't nice at all. So I can't imagine how bad it was from my wife.
I remember in the early days, my kids they learnt to walk on bearers and joists.
Hmm.
So the older two kids have definitely got very good balance.
Yes, hence the reason they're world-class gymnasts now.
Not really. Quite.
But the other component too, from the male perspective too, is that a home, when you own your own home, and this is tending towards the female side of it, is that, you know, I have rented very few houses. Two houses I've rented in our time, and I sit in properties and I go, geez, I'd love to knock that wall out. and it's so hard to sit there and actually say, well, I'd redesign this house completely. So if you've got a handy male, that could be a bit frustrating for them too, if they're renting.
Mind you, if you've got a handy male who's worn out, you know, to rent a place for a little while, it gives them a bit of a break.
Yeah, that's where we're at the moment.
Okay, so from that perspective, do something, buy a place that you'll do something to. Now, you know, some of you are buying units and some of you are buying houses and things like that. If you're going to buy a house, I'd like you to buy something you can do more than a renovation on. You know, I'd really like you to buy something that's got a bit of land attached to it so you could get out there and maybe do a subdivision as well as a renovation. So, you know, the more strategies you can add on to the one thing, the more money you're going to make. So don't just think of your house as, oh, this is where I want to live and, you know, it's close to my work and whatever. That may be the case. I remember years ago I was talking to a lady in Adelaide. And she didn't have a lot of money, but she had enough to go and buy something. And I said to her, look, you know, why don't you buy a place that you can do a bit of a reno on and you can do a subdivision on? At least that way, you know, you'll be making money out of it while you're living there. You've got to live somewhere, so you may as well make money while you're living. And she goes, oh, no, but, you know, I can only afford to buy in this price range. And, you know, that would mean it's so far away from my work and I'd have to travel, you know, 3/4 of an hour to an hour every day to my work. I'm going, hang on a minute. You know, we're talking about making money here. You know, that extra whatever it was, I think she was 10 minutes away now and it was going to take her between 3/4 to an hour away from her work. But the deal that she had eventually came back to me with was a deal that she was making about $80,000 to $90,000 on that deal over the space of a bit over a year. And her salary was $40,000. So it's like she makes 2 years' salary for the inconvenience of travelling an extra 3/4 of an hour to work. It's like, get over it.
Yeah, and sometimes we get stuck in that that precious, it's too hard for me to do that, and actually losing perspective of what the crux of that was, that she was going to earn double her income in a year and she couldn't get beyond the now and what she was doing. I can guarantee you while the driving was going backwards and forwards, she'd have plenty more time to think and maybe listen to your CDs too.
Absolutely. Yes, it's good therapeutic time.
Yes.
Okay, so PPR, do something that you can do a manufactured growth strategy on. Get something where it's a stepping stone, it's a building block to the next stage of your investing career. And it might only be a year that you're there, you know. It might be 18 months or it might be a number of years. I don't know. It depends on what the deal is and what you're actually doing. But certainly consider that home as a stepping stone to something else. Now, when we start to look at homes and things like that, the other advantage of having your own home and your PPR is that any gain that you make on it, and I'll have to qualify that a little bit, because if you do it with a proper profit-making intention, the result might be different. But if you buy it as a home and then while you're living there you go about fixing it up and doing this and doing that, and maybe later on you go, oh, I'll make more money if I do a subdivision, and you chop it in half and whatever else, then the gain that you make is actually capital gains tax-free. So the money you're making is tax-free. Now, go back to my little lady in Adelaide. You know, she was making over $100,000, or sorry, $80,000 to $90,000, and her salary was only like, you know, $40,000. But the $40,000 she had to earn, she had to pay tax on before she had any money left over for living. Now, if she earned that $80,000 to $90,000 on her home over the 12 months, or, you know, a bit over 12 months or whatever it took, then she was in a situation where she made that money tax-free. Now, that's equivalent to not only 2 years' salary, but at least 2.5 years' salary, because the rest would have gone in tax. So that's a major, major benefit of you know, having your own home, particularly when you look at the cycle of the market that you're in and you determine whether the market is, you know, is in an upward swing or not. Because if it is, geez, it's hard to say don't buy your PPR.
Mm, absolutely. You know, and the benefits of actually having that tax exemption is a big one. I mean, you obviously got to be careful that you're not seen to be trading in your own home, because the taxation office will be very severe with that implication down the track. But, you know, we happen to have bought some really nice homes over the years that have naturally grown in value, and, you know, and then the choice is whether do you sell that property. You may sometimes be better to revalue it and take the money from the bank for your further investing.
That's right, because if you do that, then you're off to the next deal and you've still got that property. And even if you move out of that property, you can, if you choose to, and it's not something you have to determine straight away, but you can choose that property remains your PPR for a period of up to 6 years. But I must say, you then have to move in sometime within that 6 years and live in it again, at least for some period of time. And you can't ask me how long, because there isn't a specific time frame. But if you move back into the property, well, you know, it's still your PPR, and any gain that you've made, even when you're out of it and renting it and claiming it on your tax returns and all that kind of stuff, for capital gains tax purposes, it's still capital gains tax free.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if we clarified from the beginning if you called it a principal place of residence. We've been using the acronym PPR, but so PPR is principal place of residence. And I know that one of your students at a boot camp realised that this could be used to their advantage. They had a two-bedroom unit in an area in Sydney that that they could use a specific strategy that you talk about, where it could take their rent. A standard two-bedroom would rent for $600, but if they use this strategy, it would rent for $900 to $1,000, sometimes $1,200. So the decision there was to set that up so that they could get the higher rent, and then they went and rented an equivalent apartment at the $600. So they were making somewhere between $300 to $500 per week extra on that property, which meant they could pay down their debt on their property, plus they had a redraw facility. So, you know, you teach that in your boot camps and in your CDs and workbooks, how to reduce tax and how to reduce your interest on those loans as well. So, you know, and then this couple could decide to move it back into the unit within the 6 years, and any gain they would have had in that time would be capital gains free.
That's exactly right. So let's go to the other one. Let's go to, I'm going to buy an investment property and continue renting, because the situation you're talking about there is kind of that. You know, they bought their PPR, lived in it for a while, but then manufactured some extra income on it and ended up, you know, renting somewhere else. Now, this is a very male-oriented strategy, in my opinion, because there's I remember years ago, I was speaking to a developer and a guy. And he was saying, you know, why would I ever want to own my own home? Because, you know, I can rent this apartment he was living in on the ocean frontage, and I could rent this apartment. You know, it's the penthouse, and you know, I've got this and that, and I've got whatever else. And you know, if I was to buy it, I'd only be getting the rent on it works out to about a 3% yield, which, you know, fair enough, it does. And, you know, then I can use my money to get out there and invest in investment properties. Now, look, I'm not against that. I'm certainly not against that. And if it fits your lifestyle, that's fine. He was also someone who, unlike you, Ian, is not very hands-on, not very handy, even though he could coordinate and do feasibility studies all day long on developments. When it came to actually hanging a picture, he was hopeless. So, you know, the need to do stuff around the home and things like that wasn't there for this particular guy. And, you know, if that fitted your lifestyle, I'm not against that. I'm certainly not. And for him and his lifestyle, he wanted to live on the beach and whatever else and have this penthouse apartment, then I go, fair enough. Understanding that, you know, if the owner of that property wants to kick you out in 12 months' time because, you know, they're going to move into it or they're going to sell it or whatever, well, you've got to be prepared to do that. And also that, you know, the money that you've got elsewhere needs to be working for you. So you do need to have it out there being an investment. Now, the advantage with that is that any of the loans on the investment property are obviously going to be tax deductible, whereas the loans on your own home are not. So on your own home, yes, you're getting the capital gains tax benefit, but on the you're not getting any of the benefit from the interest and, you know, the interest that is then tax deductible.
Yeah, so with that component there too, I agree in principle with that. I actually agree in principle with the male version with one qualifier though. If I'm in an area that is growing in capital value, I wouldn't be able to rent a property because I would be saying I could rent that property and I would be losing out on the capital growth. In the area that we currently live in, it's not a really big issue for me because the place is probably 18 months away from starting to have some growth again, and for that period in time I'm happy to take the rent and to pay someone rent on a property. That, and I'm very selective too with the properties that I do rent. I make sure that I select a property that's quite likely going to be one that the vendors will be happy to sell me if I like it and I like living there.
And obviously you've been a happy little tenant for all of that space of time, for a year or whatever. And they may well even do vendor financing into it. Who knows?
And that's exactly right. So I was very choosy with this particular house that we're currently renting. And I knew it had been on the market, so it meant that, you know, it didn't sell and they have lost capital value. So I do know the figure that they're willing to sell it at. So I will probably approach them down the track about that. And there's plenty of investors that are around that will actually that will not have their own home. And there's different reasons for that. You know, I can choose to rent my property right now, and at the end of the lease, if I don't like the area, if I'm not sure about the neighbours, or, you know, we've had, or we just want a different outlook, we can just get up and go and move on to the next one. So, you know, for us right now, we've chosen to use our money in investment and hopefully duplicate that money and grow our equity while we are renting the properties that we're in now. We'll rent that property and our other investments are growing in value. So, and better than the capital growth around the area that we've decided to live in. So, you know, and plenty of investors will decide to do that. Now, I do know that one of Dimpner's students last year had a choice of buying in a suburb the suburb she was living in was a $1 million suburb, and she could not afford to buy in that suburb with the amount of money or equity that she had there. So her decision was to go off and invest that money in different areas and grow equity and increase her passive income. And she can now afford, so previously she could afford to buy a PPR in a suburb of $600,000, and now with the extra income that she's gained using the strategies that Dimpner talks about, she can now buy a property in the $1 million range because she's increased her income.
Yeah, and that's the difference that it makes. So, look, I don't think there is a hard and fast rule one way or another, and, you know, that this one's so much better than the other. I really feel it's a matter of your lifestyle and what suits there, and also what you know, what your next move is in a lot of instances. You know, take you as an example. Now, you've just moved to a new area, and I remember saying to you, much as you didn't want to at the time, why don't you just rent for a while? Not only from a growth perspective, because the area you're moving to is not an area that has particularly high growth right now. It will have, but it hasn't right now. We've got probably about a 12-month play, as we talked about. And it also gives you an opportunity to work out where on earth you do want to live. Yeah. It's kids and schools and all of those other issues that come into it.
And that's right. And I was going to say you were right, but I won't say that. In the end, you know, we looked around a fair bit, and we looked around and we were looking specifically for a type of deal where the vendors would leave some money in, because we wanted to make sure our money was being used in our investment. And, you know, we had a couple of deals we could have taken, but the end result was exactly that. We weren't quite sure where the kids were going to go to school. We weren't quite sure about the area. We didn't know whether we wanted to be close to the beach, whether we wanted, you know, a few acres, you know, whether it was going to be just a standard block of land with a standard backyard and a nice house. We were so unsure about it all. And the end result was for us that, you know, we're renting a property. And I think given the choices of what we had to buy and what we're probably going to buy, we're two different ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, that's right. Now, let's talk a little bit more about, you know, the first homeowner again and going out and buying their first property. Should they buy a unit or should they buy a house?
Well, you know, there's different options there. You've talked about manufacturing growth by going into a property that has the ability to renovate or to subdivide or do different manufactured growth strategies that you're teaching. The other opportunity there is to go into a small block of units and try and use the sinking fund to be able to increase the equity in your property.
Yeah, this is a strategy that I talk about for first-timers particularly. If they don't have a lot of money, try and pick a block of units that's not too big. Now, my rationale behind that is that in a block of units, your unit value can be totally determined on the other people that live in that block of units. You know, there's some block of units that are, you know, 300 strong, And they tend to become secular, those big blocks of units, where you have, you know, you can quite often have a big population of one or more ethnic backgrounds, which means that you, quite often that means when you're selling your property that you can be limiting your sale to that you know, class of the buyer, you know, that is of the similar ethnic background. And you know, that's not a pro or against, it's just how it is. Similarly, when you've got really big blocks of units, you've got more people just in volume that you can't control, you know, that might have a fight or might, you know, whatever, or leave their crap everywhere, or leave their washing hanging out in the on the balcony.
And the other component of that too is that with 300 people in a unit block, you could guarantee that one of them's not a bad money manager and will have to sell their unit really cheaply. And it doesn't matter how much better your unit is than theirs, that's how a bank will look at it, or a valuer will look at that sale price and say, well, now your unit is, even though you may have paid 400 to use round figures, your unit is only now worth 300. So, you know, they'll look at that a lot. And personally, if you're looking at units and you can only afford to buy one unit in the block, 4 units, 6 units, maybe 8 units. And I like the 1950s brown brick places because they've got quite large living spaces that can be converted and you could add extra bedrooms in. I also like the 1960s, 70s red brick and yellow brick places too, because that, again, a nice little render on the outside and the bits and pieces can actually increase your value, your unit's value, just from the aesthetics of the outside.
Yeah. Yeah, so look for that kind of stuff. Keep it small. And the other thing is, the older it is, number one, is more opportunity that you can add value by renovating, because it probably will need it. But the other thing is that with an older block of units, what that means is that there have been owners over the years owning that property. And when you have a property that's in a body corporate where, you know, they've got common areas and things like that, what happens is that a certain amount of money each year has to be put into a pooled fund. Now, that's called a sinking fund. And so over the years, all of these investors or owners have put them a little bit of their money each year into this fund. And the purpose for this money is to be used to improve the all of the common areas and the upkeep of all of the common areas of the block of units. So the external is an example, and the gardens and any hallways and or pools or whatever else might be there. So what you look for is a block of units that's got a nice big sinking fund, because that can then be used to increase, you know, to be used to increase the value of the whole complex.
Yeah, and that strategy there is what you talk about a lot in, and how you would do that. And it's a little bit involved, and it'll involve you being part of the body corporate, and it'll involve you also going over to making sure you can get control, because guaranteed in that unit block there will always be the little old lady that'll disagree with everything that you want to do, because there's, you know...
she can.
Yes, that's right. So, but, you know, older people also have that mentality where, you know, you've got to try and save as much as you can. Whereas, you know, I've seen some sinking funds at over $200,000 sitting there, and the most that they've ever used out of it was maybe replace the sewer line because it had cracked and the roots had got into it. So
it can add up to a lot of money. So target old, small blocks of units where you can get in there and use the sinking fund's money to really improve the value of your property. I remember one of my students a number of years ago, she was 19 years old, and, you know, she'd done well to be able to save a deposit by the age of 19 to get into a property, but, you know, she couldn't afford very much, so, you know, a small unit, an old block of units was ideal for her. And I talked her through the process, and she went out and targeted a block of 6, and there was an old lady that owned and lived in one of them. She had bought one and she was living in there and got the first homeowner's grant and everything else to get in there. And the other 4 were all investor properties. And I showed her how to put together a bit of a proposal on to get the sinking fund money used for improving the property, and she got quotes, and she had got appraisals on the properties when the work, you know, if this work was done, what they would then be worth. And she put a proposal out to all of the owners of the properties and said, look, you know, I'm young and I'm enthusiastic, and we've got this much money sitting in the sinking fund, and I'm going to propose at the next body corporate meeting that we use that money to do these things. And she listed it all out. These are the quotes that I've got for doing that work. This is all of the assessments that have come back from the real estate agents on what the places, our places, will be worth when the work is done. And, would you consider coming to the body corporate and voting with me? And if you can't make it, would you mind giving me your proxy to vote? Well, what do you think all the investors did? They said, you go, girl. You know, here's my proxy. They went to the meeting. So she had four proxies and her own vote. And there's the body corporate manager's vote. And then there was the old lady's vote. Well, of course, the old lady voted against it. And but the motion was carried because she had the numbers. Now, that took about it took about 4 to 6 months to actually get all of that work done, and she oversaw that. And meanwhile, she's still working, she's still living there, she's still got a maid in renting the other room to help her pay for it, all of that kind of stuff. And then she went out and got, when it was all done, she went and got her place revalued, and it increased in value by something like $160,000, like phenomenal figures. And that gave her enough borrowing capacity to be able to refinance her property, extract some equity, and then use that to go and improve the inside of her unit, rent it out, positive cash flow, move on and go to the next one. Pretty good.
And I mean, you raise a good point there, because if you decide to buy a PPR ahead, you might look at those areas where there is a high need for single room letting. Mm. So you are allowed to use the first homeowner's grant, and you still can rent some rooms, I believe. Maybe, you'll have to check the websites. So that would mean if you were close to a university or a hospital, you could rent your rooms out to help assist you in paying the mortgage on your new PPR.
That's exactly right. So there's lots of opportunity there. And like I said in the beginning, I don't believe this question is a hard and fast one way or another. What I do advise people to really think about, though, is that they don't get caught up into the emotion of, oh, I'm going my first home and I want this and I want that and I want whatever. And all of this money goes into setup and prettiness, which doesn't create any value. The little tiny bits and pieces that, you know, you can literally spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on add no real value to your property from a capital perspective. And if rented, they certainly don't add any rental on them either.
I mean, a clear example of that is people that will go out and buy a $1,500 toilet just because it's a brand name, where you can buy the exact same looking toilet for probably $300 or $400. It still does the same thing, still flushes, and a valuer won't walk into your property and see whether it's a top growy model or a Turkish import. It won't really matter.
I don't think he'll be spending too much time looking at your toilet, no.
But I'm using that as a good example.
Yes, Mr. Plumber. But you're right. Ian's absolutely correct on that. And, that philosophy goes through the whole house. I mean, I'm not saying go and get plastic sinks, but, you know, there's ceramic sinks that go from one end of the extreme to the other, or stainless steel, whatever it is. So just be mindful of that kind of stuff. And another thing, if you're just starting out for the first time, don't go overboard on furniture. You know, you can spend tens of thousands of dollars on furniture, but in 5 years' time, A, you might not like it anymore because the fashion's changed, and B, it's certainly not going to be worth what you paid for it. And it's just a waste of money. And, you know, that money would be better spent paying down the mortgage so that you can reborrow or put it in an offset account so you're not paying as much interest and you're putting more against the principal so that you've got that money to go off into your next property sooner. So please be mindful of those sort of silly things.
So, yeah, we just moved into... Well, just 6 months ago moved into state and we chose not to bring our furniture with us. We sold off the furniture we had in there and we've just put into our new home a package deal of... it's a four-storey home, so there's a heap of bedrooms and it's a massive house. I think we've just paid a little bit over $11,000, including white goods. You know, there's no need to go and spend $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. Yes, the furniture might break in a few years' time, but...
But then you're bored with it anyway.
Yeah, and it's been scuffed anyway with kids and bits and pieces, so, yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying don't have nice furniture, but time it properly, you know. Have your nice furniture when you've got your income, you've got your everything that you're ever going to need for the rest of your life from a passive income perspective. And that's when you start to really go, okay, well, now I can really start to think about setting myself up with everything that I've always wanted, as opposed to trying to do that first. Because if you do that first, you'll never get to the point where, or it'll be a long way out there, you have replaced your income two or three, four times over, and you've got that ability then to be able to have whatever you want. So people tend to do things back to front too often.
Yeah, and so, I mean, what we've talked about today has a lot of... You know, have to write it down on paper. You have to look at the pros and the cons of buying the PPR and that of investment property and where does it sit, you know. And you know, there's been a couple of examples we've shown you today where that might fit your scenario and you'd have to look at it in that way. I know from the perspective of my wife right now, we had to come to an agreement that right now we're in our investment strategy, we're accumulating the properties that we want to accumulate over the next few years, and I don't see us moving into our final PPR or long-term PPR for another 4 or 5 years. Yes, we'll probably own a property in that time, that'll be our home, or two properties in that time, but the final one that's, you know, on the beachfront or on the waterfront with the with a lap pool in it and the boat sitting at the front and all that sort of stuff is still 5 years away from us, and that's our goal and plan to have that at that time.
Mm. It's just a stepping stone through the process, really, and I think anyone who really wants to go down this track and replace their income and accumulate significant wealth needs to realise that their home will be part of that process. It is just another property. It is just another tool until you get to a point where, you go, right, well, I actually don't need any more income. I've been there, done that. Now what? And that's where we start to talk about consolidation of, paying down debt so you get debt-free. You buy the property that you do want and, your strategies then really start to change. So there we go, guys. I didn't answer the question at all. But it's not a one answer. It depends on who you are, where you are, what your circumstances are. And I can tell you now, though, the correct answer for you can be calculated. You can, you can sit down and work the numbers through, and the numbers don't lie. They will tell you which one's going to be best for you at your stage of life at this point in time.
And I do remember having to do that and sitting down through one of your boot camps and saying, well, what is it that we need right now, and what's the best option for us to move forward, and what's our best outcomes? And, we at different times, at different boot camps, we've decided to do different things because it suits us to do that at that time, because that's what the numbers tell us, without emotion.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what you have to do constantly. Every deal puts you in a different position. Therefore, your next deal is going to need to be tweaked and changed because you've now got that other deal, or you've sold that deal or whatever. So it's a constantly moving target. But when you understand the process, it's actually not that hard.
No, and I do remember looking back and thinking, geez, that was, at the time, gee, how am I going to work this out? This is really hard. And now, having the education background that I've got through your program, I now go, well, it's just a matter of putting it together, and I can get my old FISO sheets and I can pull them in and I can change the numbers and I can quite openly and clearly see what's the next move.
That's right. Okay, guys, well, that's it for me. Remember to go to iTunes and download these at least every week, because we're putting up new ones every week. And or go to www.iloverealestate.tv, and you can actually go back and listen to some of the back copies. So if you go down right down the bottom and click to some of the older ones that we've been putting up there, because obviously we're doing a new one every week. There's a fair few there now. Go back and have a listen to some of those, and you know, accumulate them. Pop them onto your iPods and your iPads and your phones and whatever else you've got. And, you know, when you've got, a few minutes to spare, pop them on and have a listen. There's a huge range of topics there. And, you know, what I'd really like you to do is to think about who in your sphere of friends and family could really benefit from this information, that could really benefit from being a little bit motivated and a little bit stimulated and perhaps, you know, have that aha moment of, okay, you know, this is actually something I can do. Honestly, I've had huge success with friends and friends of families and things like that, where, you know, some of my students have just shot on a link to one of their relatives and said, look, you know, don't know whether you're interested or not, but have a listen to this. And then I get an email or a conversation with somebody they're the ones that's received that email, and it's just opened so many doors for them as to what they've then been able to go on and do. So do your civic duty, if you like, and think about who else might be able to be inspired and benefit from really, really, you know, getting in touch with who they are and what they want to achieve, and getting out and making it happen with some decent structure and education around them. So, guys, that's it from me. I will be back again to talk to you very, very soon. Thank you again so much, Ian, for joining me on the couch.
Thank you for having me again.
There you go. We'll talk to everybody soon. Bye for now.